Room 141, Texas Municipal Courts Association, will have a hospitality room, or if you prefer, suite. You'll learn a little more about Texas Municipal Courts Association either through the course of the day, or Judge Matthews will have a table set up out front, and you can go by and visit with her about it. If you're not a member, I encourage you to become one. If you are, continue your paying your dues. Our first speaker this morning is going to visit with us about motorcycles. He's an avid motorcycle rider himself, Stuart Milner. He began his employment with the City of Arlington in 1992 as an assistant city attorney and became the chief prosecutor for the City of Arlington in 1994. From 1997 to the present, he is serving as the chief judge for the City of Arlington. Judge Milner has taught classes for the North Texas Council of Governments, City of Arlington Police Academy, Texas Court Clerks Association, a Building Professional Institute, and the Texas Municipal Courts Education Center. Please welcome Judge Stuart Milner.
Thanks, Jerry. Thank you. Good morning. That sounds plenty loud there. In fact, let me, I'm not a real quiet person, so let me move that down a little bit. Everybody still hear me okay? Okay. I'm from City of Arlington, which is a sleepy little suburb smack dab between Fort Worth and Dallas of about 400,000 people. And in between about 5 million other people. So motorcycles and motorcycle safety is something that's very relevant in that area because of the number of people that we see pretty much on a daily basis that wind up getting hurt or killed. And you may wonder, well, why is this important to me and why do I need to know about motorcycle laws and safety? With the economy the way it is, with gas prices fluctuating the way they are, there will be more and more motorcycles out there, and that's the trends. And I'm going to give you some statistics today. And the statistics, you're going to say, well, why are these statistics from 2006 and 2007? And that's where a lot of them come from. It's because I'm getting a lot of my statistics from federal government or state government agencies that it takes a while for them to compile those statistics. So those are really the newest ones. Now, occasionally I do have some newer ones, but most of them are a couple years old. And this is going to be a discussion here today. If you have questions, if you have responses, please ask them. That's what makes a class, I believe, a more meaningful learning situation for everyone involved. And let me just start off by asking a couple questions from you. And I'm going to wander around the room. I'm going to stick over here sometime, but I'm going to wander around the room. I don't want to block the screen for those of you who may need to follow along. And we do have the interactive notes, which I'll mention again in a minute. But let me ask a few questions. How many of you are motorcycle riders? Great. That's a pretty good number. And so hopefully this should be the same number. But how many of you are more? How many of you have a motorcycle endorsement or a motorcycle license? Okay, good. Even more. Good. How many of you know someone that has been injured or killed riding a motorcycle? Even more hands. And that's also something that, unfortunately, the numbers go up. Motorcycle riders and attorneys have some things in common as well, as you may know. Generally, they may both have a bad reputation, and that reputation is usually because of a negative view of a few attorneys or a few motorcycle riders. For motorcycle riders, it may be the Mongols or the sport bike riders that you see on the highways. For attorneys, it's that money-grubbing, ambulance-chasing members of society that sometimes we exude. Both of those reputations are not really totally warranted or needed. And also, motorcycle riders have a lot of jokes about them, just like attorney jokes. Anybody know what you call a motorcycle rider who doesn't wear, or what doctors call a motorcycle rider who doesn't wear a helmet? Organ donor? There's quite a few answers there, but a lot of bad jokes about motorcycle riders as well. You've got some goals in your outline of what I want you to learn today. I want you to be able to identify what a motorcycle is and some of the laws that regulate them, to interpret laws that apply to the license and safety of motorcycle riders, and to apply some knowledge of laws involving motorcycles that we encounter in the municipal court setting. But there's some unofficial goals that I have for you today as well. And the unofficial goals, to me, are just as important. I want you to learn at least one thing about motorcycles, hopefully more than that, but at least one thing about motorcycles that you didn't know before you came to this course. And I want you to take, and this is the most important thing for me, I want you to take a useful tool back with you to your court from this course. And I have that useful tool, I believe it's a useful tool, that's in your outline. At the end of your outline, it's called Motorcycle Laws in a Nutshell or something like that. So if you have questions about motorcycle law, you can go to that nutshell and hopefully there will be an easy answer to that question. How many times would you like to have that type of information for specific types or categories of offenses? Well, I think this will help you with those motorcycle issues. In the outline today, as I mentioned a little bit, and as Mark mentioned also, we're really big right now on the interactive notes because that supposedly keeps your attention, keeps you writing, keeps you involved. So there is a set of interactive notes that go along with this course. And they'll have some blanks, and in the blanks are a number that looks like that number is engraved. And that is, I didn't want it to be hard at all, so that is the slide number that that answer will come from. But just to throw a little mix in there, over the period of teaching this class for the last 8 or 9 months, I've added a slide or two. So you still have to pay attention because sometimes those numbers may not be quite right. And I'll let you know when that happens, or hopefully I will. And lastly, this is a bit out there, but how many of you ever, I know most of us have been out of school for a while, how many of you still occasionally have a dream that you showed up, you're in class again, and you show up for class, and sure enough, there's a test that day, and you don't know anything about what the test is going to be on. Any of you still have that dream? A few of you? Okay. I still have that dream occasionally. I think it's part of the torture we endured during law school. I think that's what happens. Well, you get to live that dream today. We're going to take a pop quiz this morning, right now. What I would like for you to do is to take, you have, most of you have a neat little page like this from the hotel. You should all have something like that. Is to take one of those sheets. Do not put your name on it. And for those of you who like to number ahead, those overachievers that like to number ahead, there are 5 questions. And we're going to take a pop quiz. See if I can get to it here. Anybody not have a paper or pen? Everybody's found it. Okay, good. The first question. What percentage of riders involved in fatal motorcycle crashes are over 40 years old? Is it A, 25%, B, 10%, C, 33%, or D, 47%? Question number 2. What percentage of motorcycle operators involved in fatal crashes did not have a valid motorcycle endorsement or a valid motorcycle license? Was it A, 40%, B, 25%, or C, 63%? Only 3 choices this time. Question number 3. The motorcycle safety course used as a substitute for a driver safety course is not the same as the motorcycle safety course used as a substitute for a riding skills test when obtaining a license. So you've got a class you can substitute for a driver safety course for dismissal of a ticket, and you've got a class that you can substitute for a riding skills test when you're getting a license. Are those one and the same? So is it true or is it false? True would be, yes, it is the same. False would be, no, it's not the same. No, did I get that wrong? Other way around, okay. True would be, it's not the same. False would be, it is the same. I had a lawyer draft these questions. Question number 4. The motorcycle safety course used for DSC and a substitute for the riding skills test is not the same as the motorcycle safety course that can be used in exempting a motorcycle rider from wearing protective headgear. So you've got a course that can substitute for the driver safety course and the riding skills test. Is that the same as the one that would exempt you from wearing a motorcycle helmet? True would be it's not the same. False would be it is the same. And question number five, my favorite question. It is against the law for someone over 21 years of age to ride a motorcycle on a public street in Texas without wearing a helmet. It is against the law for someone over 21 years of age to ride a motorcycle on a public street in Texas without wearing a helmet. Is that true or is that false? Okay, got all your answers down. You don't have your name on your piece of paper. I want you to take your paper and crumble it up into a ball. And now I want you to throw it at somebody else in the room other than me. Okay, everybody got one now? See, the beauty of this is now you have a paper, presumably, I didn't hear a lot of throwing going on there, presumably a paper that is not yours, that has no name on it, so you can answer from that page, and if that's wrong, all you have to do is say, hey, it's not me, it's the paper. Okay, so you've got an out there, so just answer whatever's on the paper. Let's go back. And we're going to answer these relatively quickly, and then we'll discuss them in the rest of the presentation here today. What percentage of riders involved in fatal motorcycle crashes are over 40 years of age? What'd y'all have? What do your papers have? C, a lot of people say C, 33%. A, 25%. We think it's low, right? Because all the sport bike riders, they're all young, and they're all the ones killing themselves, and they're deleting the gene pool, so that's what we think. The answer is D, 47%. Question number two. What percentage of motorcycle operators involved in fatal crashes did not have a valid motorcycle endorsement on their license? The answer to this one is B, 25%, one quarter. Why is that important? Y'all think about that, because I am not really sure, but I'll throw out some reasons maybe. Motorcycle safety course. Is this true or is this false? The answer is false. You can answer from the paper. Remember, it's not your answer. And kind of was a giveaway on that one, because this next one started off by saying the two that are up there at the top is not the same as the motorcycle safety course that can be used in exempting a motorcycle rider from wearing protective headgear. Is that true or is that false? That is false. There's one course. There's two variations of that one course, but there is one course that will do all three of those things. Ah, my favorite. It is against the law for someone over 21 years of age to ride a motorcycle on a public street in Texas without wearing a helmet. I know y'all have an opinion or an answer on this one. Is that true or is that false? It's false? How many of you say true? Come on, everybody's got an answer, right? Those who say true, okay, so that means everybody else said false. It's not against the law. It is true. It is very true that it is against the law for someone over 21 years of age to ride a motorcycle on a public street in Texas without wearing a helmet. That is what the law says. There is an exemption that we'll talk about that's big enough literally to drive a motorcycle and a semi through. So, but the law is that you have to wear a helmet. Okay. And we will get to those, because hopefully that'll pique your interest in a couple of those, particularly that last one, and how that could be the case when you know that most of the time you don't have to wear a helmet. But let's start off with who are the riders that are out there. It's anybody, basically. Anyone over 15 can be a motorcycle rider, state of Texas. And a lot of the people in this room raise their hands. All walks of life, all ages, all occupations, gender, race, anyone and everyone can have a motorcycle license. Now, there's been an increase in riders in the last 9 years, and that increase is going to continue. But you might think, okay, well, motorcycles are now at their most popular that they've ever been. That would not be true. Motorcycles were most popular back in the late 70s and early 80s when we had another little gas crunch. But they are getting back to close to those levels. Registrations in Texas were 261,000 in 2003. 2006, they've grown to 361,000. In 2007-2008, numbers are expected to be around 500,000 registrations. Nationwide, there's over 7 million motorcycles that are registered. And why are more people riding? Well, that may seem obvious in some respects, but why do the sales and the registrations keep going up? Recreational riding has seen a steady increase. If you go out in the hill country, or you go down to the Piney Woods, or out to the Piney Woods, or out here to the West Texas hills, or the desert, you're going to see on a weekend or a weekday during the summer, lots and lots of recreational riders. A couple of weeks ago, I was headed down to San Antonio, and there was a little thing in Austin going on called the Republic of Texas Biker Rally, and I may not have that exactly correct, and it's not the Republic of Texas like the people who file tons of paperwork in your court. Not that. It's the Republic of Texas Bike Rally, which is a motorcycle rally. As I was driving down 35 South, literally passed or was passed by 1,000 motorcycles, and I think there were 40 to 50,000, somewhere I heard that number, 40 to 50,000 motorcyclists or cyclists down there at that rally. So there are plenty of people who are riding out there recreationally. Cost-saving involved with riding a motorcycle. You may not think that if you go look at Harleys or some of the upper-end motorcycles, but most motorcycles are far less costly than a new car. They're far less costly to operate. They're less costly to get liability insurance on most of the time, more costly to get personal health insurance on. A lot of people don't tell their agents, yeah, I happen to buy a motorcycle and I'm cruising around it on the weekends, because that makes their agent go, oh my gosh, we've got to rewrite your policy. Sport, thrill. These are the guys that are riding the sport bikes, the crotch rockets, whatever you might want to call them. And that question about over 40%, a lot of you are thinking about these sport bike riders, because these are the guys you see doing the crazy stuff out there on the highways. What's some of the craziest things some of you have seen somebody on a sport bike doing? Gary said to jump off and skate on their feet, and I've actually seen that as well. Somebody was riding down beside me on a road with speed limit 40. I don't know, was it about higher than that, or 50 or 60 in Gary's case, riding on their motorcycle, and they get up on the seat with both feet, and that gets your attention pretty quick. It's like, what's going on? Then kind of jump off to the side, and they're skating beside their motorcycle. I've actually seen that, and Gary's seen it. Yes, he saw it on I-20 going through Arlington. Yes. We have a lot of that. No? Don't have a sport bike. How about popping wheelies? I mean, that doesn't seem like that big a deal, but when you see somebody going by you on the highway at 60 or 70 or 80 miles per hour on a wheelie, then that also tends to get your attention a little bit. It's a little out of the norm. Those are the kind of things that you see, and there are, in fact, quite a few fatalities with the sport bike riders. I'm not saying there aren't, and we'll find that out. In one in Arlington we had, and I'm just going talking about Arlington because that's where my place of point of reference is. We had a motorcycle hit a Jeep, the full-size Grand Cherokee Jeep. The motorcycle was going down a road, Cooper, if you're familiar with that in Arlington, it's got a speed limit of 40 to 45 miles per hour, hit this Jeep and turned the Jeep over. And they weren't able to tell. They couldn't tell. They thought it was a hit and run for a little bit because there was so little of the motorcycle left that when they found the frame of the motorcycle, they realized that it was a motorcycle that had hit it. So there are a few of those people taking themselves out of the gene pool. Some facts and figures. And statistics, I will throw out statistics, as I said. I think they're helpful for trends. And some of them are just so surprising that it's I like to throw them out there. They're almost shocking in some ways, so I like to throw them out there. Some of them are just what you would expect. Motorcycle crash fatalities have risen every year since 2000. Fatalities in Texas in 2008 have tripled over 2007. There were 104,000 motorcycle crashes in the U.S. in 2008. This is one of those that's a little bit staggering. A motorcycle rider is 35 times more likely to die in a crash and 8 times more likely to be injured in a crash than if they had been riding in a vehicle. Let me ask you, how many of you have had a minor car crash? Okay, almost all of us. You've been around long enough, almost all of us. When you ride a motorcycle, I don't think there's the belief that I'm never going to have a wreck. There's the belief that I'm just going to survive when I do have a wreck. Because sooner or later, it's going to happen. Car, you got 4 wheels to depend on. Motorcycle, obviously, 2 or 3, as we'll mention when we get to the definition of motorcycle. First question, and we got the answer was 47%. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that's such a high number? Reaction time. What about the reaction time? Slows down as you get older. Okay. Anything else?
Reliving their youth.
Okay. Yep. Yes, and Gary kind of mentioned that too earlier. You had a motorcycle when you were younger? No problem. You get one now for recreational use? You still think no problem? And most of the time it's not. But doctors tell us that our ability to react is greatest at age 20. Our reaction time is best at age 20. Our ability to heal when you do have a wreck is best at age 25. So once you pass 40, those things are not at their prime. And that contributes to that high number of 47%. Also experience, not only the people who left and came back to motorcycles, but the people who say, who get that, what do they call it, midlife crisis, which I think is a bunch of hooey, right? You know? Sure, okay. They get that midlife crisis, go out and buy that motorcycle. I know a few people like that too. Did you ever own a motorcycle when you were younger? No, I've never had one. It's not going to be a problem. Motorcycles don't react like cars. They don't drive like cars. They don't react in emergency situations like cars. There's a lot of reasons why you'd want to be real cautious about doing something like that. And when you do get a motorcycle endorsement or license, it lasts forever as long as you have that state's license. So you can go away for 20 years or 30 years and not have to retake a test or retake any type of either written or driving test to keep riding that motorcycle. This is one of those literally and figuratively staggering numbers that are out there. 27% of motorcycle operators involved in fatal crashes were legally intoxicated. Now, how many of you do magistrations? Quite a few. How many of you have ever recall magistrating a motorcycle rider for DWI? A couple? Three or four? I probably have, but I don't remember it as much. It seems like based on this number that number should be higher, the number of people who are being arrested. Maybe it's harder to tell someone's intoxicated on a motorcycle. I don't know. But it seems like the number would be higher that we see in our jails. They're better at getting away or something. Second question was, what percentage of motorcycle operators involved in fatal crashes did not have a valid motorcycle endorsement? And it was 25%. Why is that important? I really don't know. Other than maybe if they did have that license, they would have had to gone through the testing. They might have known something, or they might have had some abilities that they'd have been taught that would have helped them react in an emergency situation. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? not important to any of us, really. Okay, good. And this is one that comes from your outline, fill in the blank. It's also one of those obvious statistics, or obvious statements. Brain injuries, head trauma were the leading cause of death in motorcycle crashes. That we'll revisit when we talk more about helmets, because that's a huge clue right there as to why helmets are so important. ...37% of all motorcycles involved in fatal crashes were speeding. There's an old saying that speed kills. Well, it kills much more efficiently on a motorcycle. When you're on a motorcycle, again, the reaction times, how the vehicle reacts to emergency situations, speed just, and if you do get in an accident and you are exceeding the speed limit or going very fast, then it's harder, a lot harder to survive it. On the way out here in Fort Worth with a lot of traffic coming out on I-20, I'm driving along, and there's a Fort Worth police officer using a laser unit, and she's shooting back across traffic. I look beside me, and I see this motorcycle just like this, one of the sport bikes. Had a helmet on. Anybody know why they wear helmets? Not to protect their heads, it's so the police officers don't recognize them. But, okay. Sport bike just zooms by, and I see her point, and I think, that's not really going to help a lot. But she points at him, like, pull over. And that didn't work. So she gets in her car, and as I'm driving, I see her pull out, and this motorcycle rider, and I won't say he was evading, because I don't know how you would, maybe he was, but he's looking back over his head, and as she's going, there's a lot of traffic, a lot of big trucks, as she's going one way, he would go to a different side of a truck. And so she would come back, she'd go in front of the truck, he'd slow down and go this way. She didn't find him. I saw him finally take an exit, and she's still going straight down the roadway. So maybe that goes back to that DWI thing, too, of why we don't see more DWIs. It's easier to evade on a motorcycle. Sometimes, and you've probably all heard this, too, statistics can be used to skew numbers or to make up numbers that support what you're trying to support. I'm not saying that this is one of those numbers, but I'm not really sure of the methodology that would allow someone to say that 37% of these fatal injuries could have been solved or could have been prevented if these persons had been wearing a motorcycle helmet. The obvious part of that is it would have helped. Motorcycle helmets prevent fatal injuries. Whether it's 37% or 5%, it's true. Ninety percent of motorcycle operators killed are male. We probably expected that. That number, though, is dropping. The number of female riders killed is coming up. I don't know where it'll eventually kind of top out at, but I suspect no more probably than 15% at any given time. We go into what is a motorcycle, and you may think that's a little bit like in Animal House when John Goodman was the football coach, and he's out there in front of the football players, and he holds up the football, and he goes, "This is a football." Well, you may think that's what this is, but it's not quite as obvious as you may think, and it's becoming less obvious every year with the introduction of new types of vehicles. It is a motor vehicle that propels itself and has no more than three wheels in contact with the ground. It does have a rider saddle. It is a motor-driven cycle. And if you want to think about it, a motor-driven cycle in some ways is any motorcycle with less than 250 cc's. There's some other ways to define it as well, and I will get into those. It is a moped. All of those things, and here's a couple of pictures. It's what we would, none of us would doubt that's a motorcycle. Now this is what the state of Texas calls a motor-driven cycle. Now, what would you call that? A moped? Well, a scooter. I would call that a scooter. But in the state of Texas, a scooter is one of these things. Okay? This is a motor-driven cycle. This is a, I put that up there. That's the type of motorcycle I have right now. It's a dual sport. Can ride it on the road, but primarily made for riding on the dirt. What is not a motorcycle? It is not an electric bicycle. It is not a pocket bike or a mini bike or a motorized mobility device or a neighborhood electric vehicle. It's none of those things. And if you're asking what is a pocket bike, this is a picture of a pocket bike, and it looks somewhat like a regular size sport bike, but that right there is probably from this table about this tall off of that table. And they still will go pretty fast, and they are very dangerous because of the height, because kids like to ride them. And we're not going to get into a discussion of the laws regarding those unless we have time at the end of this, because they are not a motorcycle, therefore they don't really fit within the provisions of the class. But basically they're not legal on streets, and your city can also eliminate them from being ridden on sidewalks or basically anywhere except for somebody's backyard. That is an electric bicycle, which is not a motorcycle. That is a mobility device, which is also not a motorcycle. Seems pretty obvious. I can tell you also that ATVs are not motorcycles. All-terrain vehicles are not motorcycles. Golf carts are not motorcycles. And you're thinking, well, that should be obvious. Well, as I mentioned, there were some bills that were out there that would have, I think, convoluted what a motorcycle is. None of them passed. But there are new vehicles out there. There's one called a Spider. Anybody seen one of them, the Spiders? Very nice looking vehicle. It's got two wheels on the front and one wheel on the back. And it has a rider's saddle. So it is going to be, it's under the definition of motorcycle. There's also something called a Kymco People Mover. And it, I don't honestly know how it's going to be viewed, because it has a canopy or a cab. And one of the requirements for not being a motorcycle or for being a motorcycle is that it not have a cab to enclose the rider or the driver. So there are some vehicles out there that will muddy the water. Any questions on the vehicles or any questions so far? Okay. Next we're going to move on to, yes, sir. Okay, the statement is that BMW now has a vehicle that has four wheels, that has a saddle and handlebars. And so I guess the question is, what would it wind up being? Under Texas law right now, it would not be a motorcycle. If it's similar to some of the ones I've seen, it looks like a motor. Are the wheels very close together?
No.
No, okay.
I saw the
first
one.
Hmm. Then I would probably, it wouldn't fall under the definition as it currently is. There are some other ones that I've seen that have the wheels very close together, and they have four wheels, and they also would not be a motorcycle, even though they look like a motorcycle. If it's encased and has a body, then it would not fall under the definition of a motorcycle either. If it, I don't have it on the PowerPoint, but it's in your outline as well as in the back under the nutshell, the full definition of what a motorcycle is. And one of the things it can't have is a cab to enclose the driver or rider. If it has a cab that encloses the driver or rider, canopy. Yeah, there are several of them out there that are going to test the limits of what the law is. Yes, ma'am.
So is there a presumption that if it's not a motorcycle, it should not be on the streets, land, or sidewalk?
Well, there's a presumption that if it's not a motorcycle, you could choose any other type of registered vehicle. It may fall under the definition of a car. And if it falls under the definition of a car, then it could still be registered. The problem with, like, the pocket bikes is they don't fall under any kind of definition of any type of vehicle that could be registered in Texas. Yes, ma'am. Oh, most of them would be about this tall, about 2 foot at the tallest.
So
Yeah, they're mostly for kids, even though you do kind of see, I've seen some funny videos of adults riding them. License requirement. You actually do have to have a license to ride a motorcycle in Texas, although some people don't believe that. There was a myth when I was growing up that if it was less than 250 cc's, you didn't have to have a license. So we stuck with that for a while. But you do have to have a license. And there are actually four different types of motorcycle license that you can have in Texas, even though we really see the regular or the most common one is just a Class M endorsement. This is an example of a Class C license with an M endorsement or motorcycle endorsement. There is a restriction, but glasses restriction on Mr. Sample's license. So it's not going to look any. And now, have anybody seen the new funky-looking license that have come out? If you go to the Texas DPS website, they also will show you the new license. But they look like a novelty. They look like something you'd buy at Trader's Village if you were from North Texas. Class M with no restrictions. There's a Class M with restriction code I. There's a Class M with restriction code K. And Class M with restriction code J, which is my absolute favorite because it's a license. The restriction is you have to have a licensed motorcycle operator within over 21 within sight. Yeah, I love that. I'm thinking I'd get that license and then just wait until somebody goes by on a motorcycle, just pull out and follow them. Hopefully they're going where you're going. And we'll go into a little more detail on these. Restriction code I, that's any, you can operate any moped or motorcycle with an engine displacement of less than 250 cc's. You might look at this as a learner's permit for a motorcycle. Got to be 15 years of age or older. You do have to pass a written test, and you do have to pass a road skills test. But you don't have to be in school. When you turn 16, the restriction is lifted. It becomes a regular motorcycle license. Restriction code K, any moped, 50 cc's or less. Now, a moped really is, I didn't have a picture of a moped, but it looks kind of like the scooter. But it actually has pedals. And you really, when you get to a place where the motor can't handle it, you can pedal to help it. Or if you run out of gas, you can pedal to help it. But it can't have more than a top speed of 30 miles per hour. And that might lead you to say, well, how do they regulate that? Or how are they going to know that? There literally is a list on the DPS website of mopeds that are approved. And in order to get a moped license, you have to submit proof that you have a moped that is on that approved list, that it can't go over 30 miles per hour. You've got to be at least 15 years of age. You have to pass a written test, but you don't have to pass a road skills test, and you don't have to be in school. Yes, sir. Yeah, when you can't go over 30 miles per hour, I would not want to be on I-30. Yeah, they start calling you a hood ornament at that point because that's not a good place to be, or I-20 or any of those highways. And what I kind of is ironic about it in a way, and it also makes sense in a way, there's no road skills test required. There's no, I think their thought pattern, state's thought pattern is you can only go 30 miles per hour. The only person he's going to wind up hurting is himself. So what the heck? We don't care if they know the rules or not, but that's just my cynical view of it. Getting an unrestricted motorcycle license. You do have to have the knowledge test. You have to have the vision test. You have to take a riding skills test. Or, as we found out from one of our questions earlier, you can take a basic motorcycle safety course. And that will take the place of that riding skills test. More on that to come. This was the question. The answer was false because it is still the same. There is one course, that basic motorcycle safeties course, that can be used when you get a ticket to do it like a driver safety course. You can take that motorcycle skills course. And the answer to that one was false as well. Here's kind of a comparison of the two and why you might want to do one and why you might not just recommend it as much to people without giving them a little bit of background as to what they're going to have to do. The riding skills test, you got to go to DPS office, you got to bring your motorcycle, you have to have a passenger vehicle with you, and that passenger vehicle, you better make sure they got insurance and got a driver's license, because that's going to be the first thing that the DPS trooper is going to check. Let me go back to that. How many of you have done the riding skills test? Okay. They probably do it relatively the same way. When I did mine, he said, when you're going to turn right, when I want you to turn right, I'm going to honk twice. When you're going to turn left, I want you to honk once. Or we're going to honk once. Okay. It's a little, you're listening, you're driving, you're doing all these things at once. It's a little, it gets you a little nervous doing that. I did do okay on the parallel parking part, but it's a little nerve-wracking. Yes? No. Okay, we'll talk that. I'll hit that next. It's actually the motorcycle safety course, the basic motorcycle safety course. Why would you do it? Well, DPS can waive the riding skills test portion of getting a license if you have taken the basic motorcycle safety course. Now, it's not like spending a couple hours of your time taking a course. It is a 16-hour course. You have to, before you can use it as substitute, you have to have a Class C license already, and you must complete the course. And we'll talk about the course. It's coming up real soon, but it's not real simple. And there are some good reasons, though, why you would want to take it. And there's some reasons why you would not want to take it. Financial responsibility for motorcycles, just jumping through that real quick, because it's a motor vehicle. It's got to have insurance. Case closed on that one. Helmets. Have to get prepared for this part. Okay. And usually I bring my helmet. I forgot to bring my helmet this time. The answer is true, and many of you answered false, as many would. That's a good answer. It's not a bad answer. But it is a law in Texas that you have to have a you have to wear a motorcycle helmet if you're operating a motorcycle. Really? There's a huge exception. Anybody know what the exception is? Have insurance? $10,000 of not liability, not vehicle insurance, but $10,000 of health insurance. Okay? And there's another exception, which is you have taken the basic motorcycle safety course. And this is how the exception is written under Chapter 661 in Section 661.003, and I am going to read it. Person required to wear the helmet at the time of the offense was over 21 years of age and had successfully completed a motorcycle operator training and safety course or had a health insurance policy that provides at least $10,000 in coverage for injuries sustained as a result of an accident on a motorcycle. There are a lot of issues with this. A lot of issues with this, not the least of which is, how much does $10,000 worth of health insurance going to help you when you're involved in a motorcycle accident? It'll get you through the door. That's exactly right. It may not even get you to the door. Had a judge who has had a second job, his judging was his part-time job. His full-time job is an air ambulance pilot. He said for the air ambulance to take off and go to a crash scene was $8,000. And then it was something like $145 per mile. So you might not even get to the hospital for $10,000. Or if it's local, you can get through the doors. In fact, there was a study done by NHTSA, National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration, that they compiled, even though the study was done about 4 or 5 years ago, they compiled data from the early 90s. So we're talking the dollar was a lot different in the early 90s than it is now. And the average cost of head trauma accident from a motorcycle was over $27,000. Today's dollars, I don't know. That's why I became an attorney. I'm not good with numbers. I would guess probably $35,000 to $40,000 to $50,000, somewhere in that range, maybe more. So that $10,000 thing is not really going to be that great. When you go to take the motorcycle operator training and safety course, one of the first things they're going to tell you is to wear a helmet. But by taking that course, you can be exempted from wearing the helmet. Also, another problem with seeing this type of charge in your court is, how do you do, I'm saying exemption, this is an exception. How is an exception proved up? And let me first read you the Penal Code, Section 2.02, exception. An exception to an offense in this code is so labeled by the phrase, it is an exception to the application of the law. The prosecuting attorney must negate the existence of an exception in the accusation charging commission of the offense and prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant or defendant's conduct does not fall within the exception. So you that are criminal defense attorneys or prosecuting attorneys, what does that mean to you? You have got to, one, put it in the complaint. Then two, you've got to prove it, that he doesn't, that he hasn't taken this course, or that he hasn't doesn't have $10,000 worth of insurance. How on earth are you going to do that? Can you call the defendant to the stand and ask him questions about it? Not if he doesn't want to go. So it really was tongue-in-cheek when I talk about the fact that the law in Texas is that you have to wear a motorcycle helmet. Because in reality, there's almost zero way to enforce this law. So there really is no motorcycle helmet law in Texas. So those of you who answered true or false or whatever, you're all right on that question. But if you want to not wear a helmet, you also, those were the two ways, but you can get a sticker. You could still be pulled over. A motorcycle rider could still be pulled over if they're not wearing a helmet. Since it is against the law, officer can pull you over and check on it. However, if you have this sticker on your motorcycle, you were not even supposed to be pulled over for not wearing a helmet. Now, the sticker's not that big, so the officer's got to have good eyesight. But you can get a sticker from DPS for $5 that you can put on your motorcycle if you're over 21 and you do have the insurance or you have taken the class. Yes, ma'am. There is no particular place that I recall it saying it has to go on. I would recommend putting it somewhere that the officer is going to be looking, which would be typically the registration. Is there? Yes, sir. Yes. Yes, it is a presumption, not only that you have it, but the officer can't pull you over for it. Well, if they're not wearing a helmet and they don't have a sticker, I think the officer would be okay pulling you over. No. No presumption, no legal presumption. Goes back to the exception. And back to your question, I would say you have your inspection sticker and your license plate are supposed to be on the back of the vehicle. I would say put that sticker right there.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
There's no law, but if you check with your inspection guys, there's a little guideline that tells you that.
For the inspection sticker? And that's one of the ones I ran down, and I will mention at the end of the class about where your inspection sticker is supposed to be. Oh, it does? Okay. Gary says that there is, I guess, a regulation in that situation that tells them where the sticker is supposed to go, and it is close to where the inspection sticker is on the back of the license plate. Yes, sir?
Is a sticker required for people who have more than one bike? I mean, are you required to have a sticker on each and every bike?
You would have to have one on each and every bike. Now, everybody who's riding that motorcycle is presumed to be covered unless they're under 21. And these are just reverse statistics of the same thing, which basically that wearing a helmet is good for you. And this type of motorcycle helmet law that we have is called, with no affection, a weakened helmet law. What the law that we used to have was called a universal helmet law. And Texas is not alone in this helmet situation. There was a very strong lobby, and still is, for motorcycle riders who don't want to wear helmets. And I forgot the man's name who headed up that lobby. And he basically went through many, many states, not just Texas. Most states went to a weakened helmet law because of this one man, pretty much, his efforts, his organizational efforts. He should have been in Congress himself. I want to say his first name is Skip, but I don't think that's right. Sonny, okay, I think that's right. I knew it started with an S. Okay. Went from state to state. Most states in the continental United States went to a weakened helmet law. Some states have gone back, and more on that in just a moment. But not surprisingly, when Texas went to a weakened helmet law, our fatalities increased by 31%. I believe that was 1997 when we went to a weakened helmet law. From 1997 until 2004, the registrations have increased by 51%. Motorcycle fatalities have increased by 90%. And just a couple examples from other states. Florida had an increase of over 40% in fatalities. What's unique about the Florida situation is they basically got a promise from this lobby, your fatalities won't go up more than 15%. And in fact, they went up 40%. So Florida is one of the states that is looking at going back to universal law. Louisiana went to a weakened helmet law, but Louisiana, their statistics showed they had almost 100% compliance with their helmet law in 1999. That's pretty remarkable. 100% of people who were required to wear a helmet were wearing a helmet. When they went to, they had a fairly low fatality rate as well. When they went to a weakened helmet law, their rate went up, not surprisingly. Well, they have gone back to a universal helmet law, and their fatalities have fallen by 87%. Just looking at the Louisiana statistics, not to insult anybody who's from Louisiana, but their numbers, they get really good numbers. 87% drop in fatalities is remarkable. Yes? Oh, that's a great question. The question is, would somebody explain to her why you would not want to wear a motorcycle helmet? It's about freedom. And freedom, as we know, isn't free. We can tell by the hospital cost. It's expensive. And who winds up paying? I don't think I have it in the outline or the PowerPoint, but I think only 40% of the people who are not wearing helmets, that are involved in the accidents, that have all these medical bills, have the insurance to pay for it. So who's paying for that other 60%? It's you and me. So why wouldn't you want to wear, well, just to respond, it gets 105, 110, Texas in the summertime, helmets are kind of hot. That's a real weak excuse, but that's one of the ones I can think of. I don't want somebody telling me what I can do. That's another one. Yes, sir.
The guys that don't like to wear helmets say that it cuts the peripheral vision and you can't hear stuff coming up behind you.
Cut your vision down and you can't hear. Now, on the can't hear one, I would agree with that. To a degree, peripheral vision, the helmets today, not much. I mean, y'all may disagree with me, but the helmets that are made today, you can see pretty well. You got to turn your head anyway when you're riding a motorcycle. But the hearing one, sure, you don't hear as well. Another thing about the helmets now, as opposed to a few years ago, is they have vents in them. They are much cooler now. They will vent you as you're riding down the road. The faster you go, the cooler it gets, which is why some of them are speeding. But I don't know that I have a really good answer to that question. Anybody else have answers? What excuses you've heard? They don't look good. Yeah, that's okay. And again, I'm not sure I heard any good excuses, but I heard a lot of excuses. This one looks good. Helmets must be Department of Transportation approved. You think that one's DOT approved? No, it can't have, doesn't have a sticker. doesn't have a sticker, and it has a little thing sticking out of the top, made of metal, called a spike. Not going to be, you can't have protrusions. However, I have seen the trend of the guys riding with the Mohawks that are made out of, I don't know, like broom or something. And I'm probably not going to get in trouble with an officer for that because it's not going to hurt any, well, can't think it would hurt anybody if they got into a wreck. But you see some interesting helmets out there for sure. And believe it or not, they're helmets that do not meet approval. Typically, I would bring two helmets. One is a helmet that's made for ATVs, and the other is a helmet that's made for motorcycle. The ATV helmet is not DOT approved. Does not have a DOT sticker on it. There is a difference in the weight. There's the ATV or the novelty helmets are much lighter. A good motorcycle helmet will have a lot of heft to it, a lot of weight to it, has a lot of cushion to it. And that's what you would want. As one of the times I had a motorcycle accident, and it weren't that many, it sounded like I had a whole bunch. One of the two times I had a motorcycle accident, left a groove in the back of my helmet, a very deep groove that if I hadn't been wearing a helmet, would have been my head. And also, if it hadn't been a quality helmet, it would have been my head. So good quality helmet's a good thing to have. And there's not a specific violation. If somebody's wearing a novelty helmet or they're wearing a non-DOT approved helmet, there's not a specific violation that the officer could write other than, and you've probably all seen them, that using equipment not DPS approved. That's basically what it would be. Any other questions on the helmets or comments on the helmets? Okay. To the motorcycle class. I know there have been a few questions that I haven't really answered because I knew we were getting closer to this point. Yes?
Good motorcycle helmet
call. Well, I would say a good one start around 100. And okay, well, I'm a lot cheaper than him. But I was going to say, there are helmets that are, I would say, I'd agree that around the $400 range is the ones that you would, if you're riding every day, that's the range you'd want to be wearing. Cost. And that's a comment I usually make about the novelty helmets. You can buy an ATV helmet for $70. And is it a good helmet? No. But is it better than no helmet? Yes. So if somebody wants to go down there, and that brings up a good point. I have not checked to see if there's any group that will provide helmets.
There's a tremendous difference in how much you buy a DOT-approved helmet for $70. You can buy a CL 2006 approved helmet and spend $700 or $800.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And like everything else, do reviews and check because they are almost all tested by different groups out there. And what I've looked at is there wasn't a tremendous amount of difference in the results from the test from the group, say, that were in the $300 to $700 range. The novelty helmets, there's a huge difference in the testing. And then the lower cost helmets didn't test near as well. I am. Passenger rule laws apply pretty much the same. If you're over 20, if you're under 21, you got to wear a helmet. If you're over 21, you don't have to wear a helmet. If you, for one, if the owner has a sticker, then that applies to the passenger as well. If you have insurance, then that will apply to you as well. If you have taken the motorcycle safety course and you're riding as a passenger, then that would exempt you as well. Talking about the class, why wouldn't you want to take this class? Let's go back to one of the reasons. For dismissal of a speeding ticket, if you are riding on a motorcycle and you receive a traffic violation for which you could do a driver safety course, you are, as a judge, are supposed to tell them that they can take the motorcycle safety course. They're not required to, even if they were riding the motorcycle. They're not required to, but they can take it. Why might someone not want to take it? Well, it's 16 hours long. It's a long course. It's 2 days long. you show up there, and also I think I've got this somewhere, but it's not cheap. The state says that the fee can be no more than $195. Anybody want to guess what the normal cost of the class is? $190 is what I found most of them are. So they're fairly expensive, but they're great classes. And some of the stuff I'm saying, you may think, well, he's not liking the classes. No, I think they're great, but you just got to know what you're getting into. They are expensive. They are time-consuming, but you go there, you ride a motorcycle. It's not classroom. There's a little bit of classroom, but you ride a motorcycle. Motorcycle's provided, and it's good knowledge to have because they do talk about a lot about emergency procedures. Motorcycles, and I've mentioned this two or three times, do not handle the same way as a vehicle in emergency situations. Even the really good ones don't handle. They do have lots of motorcycles now that have ABS brakes, but you still only got two wheels most of the time. Was there another question? Okay. All the provisions and the guidelines, they're in Chapter 662 of the Transportation Code for that class. And I mentioned too that there are two versions of the class. There's the basic, and then there's the advanced. The advanced is an 8-hour course, and you do have to take your own motorcycle to the advanced. The advanced is really just there, and I don't know, just reading the law, you could do the advanced course for a driver safety course substitution as well, if you already have done, but they're not going to let you do the advanced course unless you've already done the basic course. Talk about some miscellaneous laws and rules. You do have to pay tolls, but you can't pay more than a car. Can't be made to pay more than a car. Motorcycles can use the HOV lanes, even if you only got one person on them. That's a plus. Passengers must wear helmets unless the exemptions apply. Motorcycles must be inspected and registered to operate on a public street. That sounds, again, like the obvious. And I've been told, and you probably would agree, that I've been told I was the master of the obvious, and I don't think it was a compliment. And most of this is very obvious. It's obvious that a motorcycle has to be inspected and registered to operate on a public street. What's not so obvious sometimes is what is a motorcycle, and we talked about that. So that's why I threw that in there. You cannot register or have inspected a pocket bike. So it's not because it's not a motorcycle, and therefore it can't be operated legally on the street. But talking about that, how many of you have seen in your court some 12, 10, 14-year-old come in, and he's got five charges, and they are operate a motorcycle without registration, operate without a license, operate without insurance, operate blah, blah, blah. Anybody seen that? You know what? I refer those to the prosecutor because I really don't think those are valid charges. That's not a motorcycle under the law. It's not required to be registered. It's not required to be inspected. So how can you be charged with something that doesn't apply? Now, there may be, like in Arlington, we have an ordinance that says you can't ride them on the street, you can't ride them on the sidewalk. Well, excuse me, state law says you can't ride them on the street. Ordinance that says you can't ride them on the sidewalk, and really the only place you could ride them in Arlington is in your backyard or a parking lot somewhere. And when you have a motorcycle inspected, it does not have to have the emissions test. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. They probably have their license plate on the side of the vehicle. A lot of the sport bikes, they mount them. There's a, what do you call, can't think of my parts right now, the swing arm for the back tire, where the back tire is mounted. They mount them on the side right there. And that would be improperly displaying registration or fail to display a registration of the vehicle. It is supposed to be on the back, and it's supposed to be mounted horizontally. That's another thing a lot of them do, will turn them sideways. You won't necessarily find that in the law, but you will find that in the regs. Same way with the inspection sticker. The inspection sticker is supposed to be mounted on the back of the vehicle, close to the license plate. Just a minute to talk about, we just got through a legislative session and about laws that would apply two motorcycles, and really there's nothing to report. There were quite a few that got close. There was one that got really close, which was Senate Bill 1967, which would have required that everyone who's getting a motorcycle license take the basic motorcycle safety course, which I think is a great idea. But like most bills, probably most of you have heard that the process for getting bills or the legislative process is like watching sausage get made. It truly is that way. You'll see some good bill come in, and then it just gets added to and gets these amendments to it that just make it ugly and disgusting to look at. And that's kind of what happened with this one bill. That same bill that would require you to have the basic motorcycle safety course, they tacked on this language that said that if you caused an accident, failed to yield right away, an intersection accident, very specific, first they had it that it would be a Class A misdemeanor offense, which you could go to jail for a year if you caused that accident and there were serious injuries. Well, then they said, well, there's no intent. That doesn't really sound right. So they reduced it to, okay, we're going to put a fine in there. The fine would be the same range. So it would be a $1,000 to $4,000 fine for causing that accident for failure to yield right away. But they messed up. There was a typo. There was a typo when they typed that. And instead of writing 4,000, they put, instead of the comma, they put a 1. So it would have been a $1,000 to $41,000 fine that we would have had jurisdiction over. That one did not pass right at the end. Some laws that were in there that would have been great that didn't get passed. Let me ask this. How old do you have to be a passenger on a motorcycle? No age minimum. And just to throw out there, well, you could be 2 months old and be riding a motorcycle as a passenger. Maybe you could find some way to apply a seat or a safety belt or a safety seat law to that to keep that from happening. But safety seat laws require that the vehicle be equipped to hold a safety seat, and the motorcycle's not. So I say that as kind of just to shock you, but it basically is true. There would have been a law, or there was a bill, that said you had to be, I believe it was 6 years old, to ride as a passenger on a motorcycle. Sounded great. Didn't pass. Can you use a cell phone while operating a motorcycle? Not against the law. Now it will be if you're in a school zone, as it will for any other vehicle driver. But it's not against the law to use a cell phone on a motorcycle. And I know technology is getting pretty good, and maybe you could have some kind of hands-free device. I know you could have a hands-free device that would operate through your helmet or through an intercom in your helmet. That's fine, but I can just envision somebody doing this, driving down the road on their motorcycle. And some of you may have actually seen that. But that law did not pass either. So really, as far as I can... Now, some of you may... Anybody following the legislative session that saw anything? I didn't see anything really that related substantively to motorcycles. That passed. Okay, that's... There was the... And vulnerable road users was one that got vetoed by the governor. That would have applied. So nothing substantive. 3 minutes? Okay. And in your last thing I was going to mention was in your applicable motorcycle laws in a nutshell, for those of you who really like to get down to the minutiae and find something out, when you I mentioned the fact that to have a motorcycle inspected, you don't have to have an emissions test. Well, somebody brought to my attention that really doesn't say that in the law. That it says all motor vehicles, and motorcycles are motor vehicle. And I thought, well, I know you don't have to have an emissions test. So I was able to find it, and if you look at page 13 of that nutshell, it is actually in the Texas Administrative Code, Title 37, Rule 23.93B9C, that you don't have to have an emission test on a motorcycle. And if you're looking for the law that the inspection sticker has to be attached to the rear of the motorcycle near the license plate, that's also there, and that was one that was kind of hard to find as well. And I put a brief section at the very end when it's not a motorcycle to kind of help you find the definitions of all those things I talked about that are not a motorcycle, because I know some people see a lot of that in your courts of people coming in who weren't riding the motorcycle who get traffic violations. And thank you very much. I'm sure that I got 1 minute left, and I will gladly give you a minute. Thank you very much for your time and attention here this morning.
Thank you, Judge Milner. We do have a 10-minute break. Be sure and turn in your green sheets indicating which breakout sessions you'd like to take. You have a box at the back, Mark?
There's going to be at the front desk. We also have been given by this jewelry stand a door prize, if you will. So we're going to draw one of these green forms later, and there's a tennis bracelet with garnet and opal that they've given, so the clerks are already in a frenzy over it. So it might be a good thing to take home on your wrist or to take home for your wife.